information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight,
we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
No one will be able to stop the response and consequences. This is not a threat, just a statement of political fact. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 188 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 1st of October, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, floating vibes, mudslides, and biofeedback. Corpse farmers, coups in pop culture, overdoses, shooting sprees, and the man who fell to earth. Police state updates, surveillance and apple pie, plus Obama's wars, 9/11 news, and recovery right around the corner. All that, so much more. October 1st, 2010, episode 188 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Can't take it to the bank, and you can't take it back.
Floating Vibes from Surfer Blood, from their debut record, Astro Coast. So love that record. I'm stoked. They're coming to town Sunday night. They're playing with the Drums, who we heard on the previous episode, 187B. It sounds so old and so new all at the same time. But my friends, this is the long-awaited 188th episode from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, all that and so much more. Welcome to the show. If you are new, big tent, wide arms, nonpartisan, welcome aboard. Share and share alike. That's how this all works. That's how the alternative media is only going to exist. We got to stop fighting amongst each other and stop falling for the COINTELPRO divide and conquer. We're here to incite a revelation because it is a war on consciousness. We took last week off, family in town, a much-needed break. I'm feeling good, I'm feeling jazzed, I'm feeling caffeinated, and I'm feeling the floating vibes. And we have so much to go over this week. It's going to blow your mind. Again, this is the 188th episode. It's already the 1st of October, 2010. Time is speeding up. And we are broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Simulcast, huge thanks to zeropointradio.com, blasting it worldwide as we speak, and also in Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. And, of course, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, Simulcast Live, and all the others. And we're just going to blast through it. And, again, I'll tell folks, all the links are on the page. All you pretty much need to know is MediaMonarchy.com and MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. But thanks to FROlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, Radio23.org, and of course we're on Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and YouTube and Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, all that and so much more, using all the free angles we can find and trying to expend as little money as possible doing this. Hopefully using this system against itself, essentially. If we can feed back that truthful virus. I'd also like to remind you and implore you, if you find this show valuable, to donate. The button is there. The P.O. box is there. All on the top of the page. Your support helps keep MediaMonarchy.com rolling and rolling and rolling and getting bigger. And only more things to come. Of course, we have the sister site, cyberspacewar.com, foodworldorder.com. We do the weekly video series with Corber Report on newworldnextweek.com. Lining up some interviews for October. There's going to be probably some mixtapes coming your way. And hopefully in-studio guests, all that and so much more. Again, we try and bring it to you here on MediaMonarchy.com. Looking at the news on this Friday morning, October 1st, 2010, an amazing story that is on the front of Google News. U.S. apologizes for syphilis experiment in Guatemala. The United States apologized on Friday for an experiment conducted in the 1940s in which U.S. government medical researchers deliberately infected Guatemalan prison inmates with syphilis. This is just another example of eugenics operations that have run all throughout the 19th and 20th century, documented quite well. Hitler didn't invent it. He learned it from the West. He learned it from Sanger, Planned Parenthood, and all the rest of the Fabian socialists. Now, something interesting, and I got actually a message from my man Richard Andrew Grove at tragedyandhope.com. And he did the same thing I do, or vice versa. Run a search on Google of terms you want to know more about. Run it in news, and then subscribe to that feed. type in the word eugenics and then save that feed, and you'll get these kind of stories which spill out all the time and don't always make it amazingly to the top of Google News as it is right now. Of course, Rambo is quitting the White House. He's gone from the Israeli army to chief of staff with Barry Satoro, and now he's moving to the home of, you know, they do gangster right. He's going to run for mayor of Chicago. I believe we'll have some passing reference to threatiganda of terror attacks to unseat Mayor Daley in Chicago. And, of course, all these folks left and right, two wings of the same phony bird. It's become pretty obvious. But that's how they roll. They need terror. They tell you that. Gosh, we're just not going to be able to cram this agenda down your throat unless we have some sort of catalyzing false flag terror event to scare the hell out of you. Gunmen torch NATO tankers in Pakistan. All that and so much more going on all around the world. Peace activists plan a protest today. This relating to the recent FBI raids, which we're going to get into. But let's start it off with the massive 9:30 news purge, floating vibes. And again, I'll remind you that we were off last week, so it's almost 2 weeks worth of news, and it's amazing how quickly things move, and that 2 weeks seems like 2 months or 2 years. I can't go into depth in to every story, or even most stories we're going to cover here. I think the role or the niche or the way I found that I do this show, and I think the way I found that folks find it valuable, is that it's a massive information blast. When you hear something that sends a red flag or tickles your fancy or is an area that you know something about or know nothing about, go research that area. Go drill down. So between the podcast and the videos and all of those things connected, again, it's all about sharing. Let's get to it, my friends. BioWars EnviroHealth updates kick it off, and we'll take it from the Associated Press going back just a few days ago. About 100 people were arrested Monday outside the White House while protesting against mountaintop removal mining, temporarily trading their freedom for a chance to highlight what they consider an environmental calamity. The protesters, arrested after refusing orders from U.S. Park Police to leave the sidewalk on Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House, were taken to a waiting city bus. As police escorted them one by one, hundreds of their supporters screamed encouragement from behind the police lines, like fans greeting runners from the sidewalk of a marathon. Most of those arrested went along peacefully, but a few resisted, leading Park Police to drag them to a police truck. Now, the photos that go along with the story, and again, this is Associated Press report, what we're linking to NPR. The photo I included on my post has that element of fanaticism. This is well placed. This is an important issue. If you've listened to the show at all, you know that I'm a born and raised West Virginia boy. Lived there 28 years. Been in Oregon for 5 now. This is pretty much an integral issue to the survival of the mountain state. The mountaintop removal state. I'll also point you back to our interview with Reverend Billy on Mountaintop Revival. But I posted up this photo, just it struck me as teetering on the edge of losing it. But again, I'm not saying it's not well placed. Hundreds feared dead in Mexico mudslide. Again, my friends, we're going down the BioWars, EnviroHealth, the wild weather, the attacks on our very bodies going on. Remember that oil spill? That Gulf oil spill? You know, it's all cleaned up. It's all taken care of. It's over. Hat tip to my man Jeff Long at Redacted News for pointing out that WJLA-TV fired one of their veteran reporters after he cited the very factual but yet inconvenient, uncomfortable truth connecting British Petroleum and Barry Satoru.
On the spill's three-month anniversary, there is more outrage today, including on Capitol Hill. That's where Doug McKelway joins us from now live to explain. Doug?
Yeah, moderate outrage, I would say. The demonstrators are gathering up behind these trees here. Very few of them, in fact. It may be an indication of where this movement is headed right now. The demonstrators, who are largely representing far-left environmental groups such as Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth, are gathering here to underscore how many members of Congress have, quote, now, dirty oil money on their hands. Maybe a risky strategy, because the one man who has more campaign contributions from BP than anybody else in history is now sitting in the Oval Office, President Barack Obama, who accepted $77,051 in campaign contributions from BP.
And if you're a longtime listener of the show, you'll know that back in late 2007 and early 2008, we were reporting those very facts to you, that British Petroleum and Goldman Sachs were the biggest funders of this guy who seemingly came out of nowhere . And I'm pretty sure you've heard a little bit about Goldman Sachs and British Petroleum in the news over the last 2 years. Coincidence? Antibacterial soaps contain endocrine disruptors capable of interfering with hormones critical for normal development and reproduction. Hit that from Cryptogon.com. That sources right back to press release and pharmaceutical small print. Our last note on BioWars EnviroHealth is a listener-submitted piece, or rather a news tip, I should say, and again, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. A guy named Gary Wolf doing a TED Talk, and by now you probably know what a TED Talk is. They're the amazing talks that feature folks like Bill Gates talking about turning mosquitoes into flying syringes, and the recent one covered on CorporateReport.com on the episode You Are Being Gamed about essentially the Skinner boxes we're all being put in, and how with all our little smart devices we'll constantly be ringing up points. Ooh, I took the stairs. I get carbon footprint points. It'll all be tracked and traced, and it'll be made like a video game. So as we've said many, many times, it doesn't really seem as though we're going to wake up and it's going to be martial law and there's going to be stormtroopers marching down the street. It's going to be slow, incremental. And we always cite Aldous Huxley, who said, in the ultimate revolution, we can get people to love their servitude. We give it up willingly. So that clip is there. And it's a guy named Gary Wolf talking about biofeedback. And again, this just builds on the same idea we were talking about of the virtual Skinner box. And essentially the control grid. A couple drug war notes. Medical marijuana growers join the Teamsters Union. We have reported similar situations before. That's from the Sacramento Bee. The other story from News Junkie Post. T-Mobile sued for blocking marijuana texts. Now, that's not you texting your friend to see if you can get some weed. That's people using apps to find legally sanctioned and operating medical marijuana dispensaries. T-Mobile took it upon themselves to say, no, we don't want to let you do that. We don't want to let you use anything natural. Why would something that grows naturally and has been used for millennia to make the strongest natural fiber known to man, grow a new crop every 6 months? We can't have that. The banksters can't have that. The multi-generational serial killer families that jockey for position and occasionally bump each other off, as opposed to the all-inclusive, almighty Illuminati. They buy up the real, they make illegal the real, and sell us back the fake. They make money off of it, and it's a little bit of a soft kill. So those are your drug war, bio war updates on the News Purge 930. But it keeps going and going and going. And we're going to get into the Econo crash situation. So I suppose it's appropriate we're going to hit this kind of at the beginning of this episode, and I believe we're going to close out with Econo Crash Notes. It seems to all fundamentally come down to those very things. So let's start it off with a piece from Barry Ritholtz on Ritholtz.com. The left-right paradigm is over. It's you versus corporations. Every generation or so, a major secular shift takes place that shakes up the existing paradigm. It happens in industry, finance, literature, sports, manufacturing, technology, entertainment, travel, communication, etc. But here, we're going to talk about the paradigm shift that is occurring in politics. For a long time, American politics has been defined by a left-right dynamic. Liberals versus conservatives. Pro-life, pro-choice. Tax cuts, more spending. Pro-war, peacenik. Environmental, economic. Pro-union, union-free. Gay marriage, family values. School choice, public school. Regulation, free markets. The dialectic. The new dynamic, however, has moved past the old left-right paradigm. We now live in an era defined by increasing corporate influence and authority over the individual. These two interest groups have been on a headlong collision course for decades, which came to a head with the controlled demolition and bankster bailouts. Where there is massive concentrations of wealth and influence, there will be abuse of power. There will be abuse of power. The individual has been supplanted in the political process nearly entirely by corporate money, legislative influence, campaign contributions, even free speech rights. If you want to break it down, most of the regulations that govern energy and banking were written by corporations. That's the biggest influence on votes, corporate lobbying, political action campaigns, now unlimited, patent protections continually weakened, Supreme Court ruling that corporations have free speech rights equivalent to people. So much for the original intent. We all know that corporations are people. The left-right political phony paradigm is collapsing, and that's why you see co-opting of breakout movements, pleading for some type of third party. The left-right paradigm is over. It's you versus corporations. You can read that entire piece on Ritholtz.com. Income inequality in U.S. reaches record high. More on that from allgov.com. Out of Australia, news.com.au, U.S. government hiding true amount of debt. It's a shell game. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, writing for The Telegraph, has part two of his shut down the Fed. When you have people in the UK pointing out that the Federal Reserve is private, owned by private central bankers, and they loan our government money at interest, and our phony Congress won't do what they're constitutionally obligated to do, is print our own money. Ex-city manager among eight arrested in a California scandal. U.S. to increase watch over foreign money transfers. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. As we see, again, all the itchy trigger fingers. Devaluing everything. Gosh, why does everything get so much more expensive through the years? It's not that they're more expensive. It's that our dollar is worth less and less and less. The Federal Reserve was set up to supposedly stop these crazy boom and bust cycles, but we know that, again, the families, the Wall Street money, the drugs that fund this, that's how they roll. A disturbing one from McClatchy on China's dark side. On the Yellow River, corpses mean cash. Corpse farmers. That's the model state. That's the UN's most favored nation. We'll get into more of the history of that towards the end of the episode with Mao and his great leap forward. So as we look around the world, we do see massive protests erupting, and we finally see now that word austerity being used. Where did that word come from? Just kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? Massive protests in Europe. We had speculated on New World next week about a possible uprising or coup in Greece. Now we look at the newspapers late last night. There has been a coup in Ecuador. More on that in just a couple of minutes. But what I was getting to, coming from ABC News, toxic bank cement truck blocks Irish Parliament. Huge, massive cement truck with toxic bank painted on its huge cement chamber. Nice photo. We'll close out the EconoCrash notes with a slew of the latest articles and appearances from Webster Tarpley, tarpley.net, getting into the failures of globalism. We've also got, of course, as I just referred to, European cities hit by anti-austerity protests. However, we're going to take the clip from something that I was not aware of. And now the genie's out of the bottle. We've now had Nicolas Sarkozy mention a 1% tax on the banksters.
Well, for more, I'm joined by investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. Webster, always good to see you. So you heard the intro, a little bit short on money. Who's to blame here?
Well, the world banking community, of course, because they don't pay their taxes. What we're talking about is the Millennium Goals, 8 areas, right? World poverty, education, child mortality, maternal health, other things. And the hope is that you can reduce the extreme poverty, people living on less than a dollar a quarter a day, from about $1.5 billion to only $920 million in 5 years. But everybody, I think, now agrees, that's being honest, that this goal is getting farther away, not getting closer. Now, the one speech today that I think stood out with something concrete that people can act on is, of all people, French President Nicolas Sarkozy. And his question was, 10-minute speech, there's budget pressure all over the world. If you don't have this money to do the development goals, where could you get it? And the obvious place to get it is tax the banks. Tax the people who caused the depression. Tax the people who are generally, a little bit like the French nobility before 1789, say that they're immune to taxation. So
but
tax
isn't that political suicide, though,
evidently
for some
not.
Leaders? For
no,
some leaders?
No, for some. But for Sarkozy, it's a political lifesaver because he's got to contend with Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the head of the International Monetary Fund. In other words, the biggest lobbyist for the bankers, the profiteers, and the speculators. So he's got ulterior motives. But let's look at what he says. It's a financial transaction tax. Now, people may know this as a Tobin tax, as a securities transfer tax, as a Wall Street sales tax. I think that says it all. In Britain, it's known as a Robin Hood tax, and it became a bit of an issue in the British election. So, small percentage of world financial turnover turns into huge amounts for world economic development. Now, obviously, the questions are, who gets this money? How is it used? How is it collected? Right? Does it go to the IMF and the World Bank? Well, no, we certainly don't want that. Sarkozy will be the head of the G20 and the head of the G8, the president, starting in November. And he's going to use this for his election campaign. And I think this is actually it's a boon for the world. Just to give an example of how much money could come out of this. The Bank for International Settlements does a survey every 3 years about world financial flows. And what they found is that as of right now, and you can read this in the Wall Street Journal September 1st, we have $4 trillion a day in foreign exchange transactions, world currency markets. Now that means 1,000 trillion a year, one quadrillion of currency. A very tiny percentage has anything to do with trade. This is mostly pure speculation. So if you get 1% of that, that's $10 trillion.
All right, but the obvious question then is, why hasn't this been done already?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the question, isn't it? We know the answer. The same perpetrators who cause the problems offer us a phony solution. Problem reaction solution. As we move on to our geopolitical rundown, the grand chessboard, if you will, we take it from the Washington Post going back to Tuesday, September 28th. And speaking of France on high alert as officials warn of possible terror attacks. When an unclaimed package was spotted in a busy Paris subway station Monday, police immediately diverted trains, ordered thousands of frustrated travelers into the street, and dispatched a bomb squad to test for explosives. Within a half hour, the armor-suited specialists had determined there was no bomb. Train and subway passengers flooded back into the Saint-Lazare station. Rail lines reopened, and France's increasingly nervous anti-terror authorities breathed a sigh of relief. The alert was short-lived, but the message was clear. France has the jitters over the possibility of a terror attack. In a country where people sometimes make fun of precautions taken in the U.S. since 9/11, Sarkozy's government has gone out of its way in recent days to warn repeatedly that terrorists may be planning a new attack in France. Is this connected to Sarkozy calling for the 1% tax? We can speculate. On around the ground, grand chessboard, Pentagon says two Russian aircraft buzzed a U.S. warship. And from Truth Out, United Nations fact-finding mission says Israelis executed U.S. citizen Furkan Dogan. D-O-G-A-N, this goes back to the flotilla raid. And we'll get the breaking news from Mark Crispin Miller's News from Underground. MarkCrispinMiller.com. Military coup underway in Ecuador. Included in this post, links to the BBC and warisacrime.org. And I believe we could even just glance at the front of Google News to see more about it. Oh, no. It's gone. Nothing to see here, folks. No military coups taking place in South American countries. Interestingly enough, in wake of this coup, GregPalace.com posted up an interview he conducted in 2008 with the president of Ecuador, President Correa, C-O-R-R-E-A, where he talked about their lawsuits against Chevron and said that, quote, Ecuador is no longer for sale. And that's how it rolls. If you dare to try and keep some of your natural resources for your own people, you'll be softened up by the private military contractors who will make cozy ground for the international corporations to come in and steal your resources and pollute your land and give you a pittance for it. A couple of history mystery notes. We'll return to Tarpley.net for an important note that in 1932, Fox helped make propaganda films for Hitler. Observers of the current U.S. election season have noted the prominent role of Murdoch's reactionary Fox News, which currently employs GOP and Tea Party partisans Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, Sean Hannity, and on and on. Some have alleged that a television network carrying so many potential political candidates and propagandists on the payroll is unprecedented. However, there is a precedent for large-scale Fox intervention into political campaign. In 1932, the German newsreel subsidiary of Fox News Channel's corporate ancestor called Fox Films intervened in national elections in Germany. The candidate Fox Films supported? Nazi leader Adolf Hitler. More on this from the book The Rise and Fall of the Weimar Democracy. The other note on the history mystery tip goes to the BBC, something we should perhaps spend more time on. It's very appropriate to the media monarchy. Sounds of history at great risk, say U.S. researchers, as we start to lose things that have been on celluloid and acetate, dub plates, all of those things falling apart. So there's your history mystery. There are your geopolitical updates. There are your econo crash updates. But now we get to an area that seems to only be growing and rising. Sometimes we call it predictive programming. A psyop, a psychological operation. There are so many things to include in our Holy Hexes updates. And we'll start at the top. from NewsJunkiePost.com asking the question, are Christian, Jewish, and Muslim fundamentalists taking us back to the Dark Ages? I don't want to offend any Christian or Jewish or Muslim or atheist friends. I was brought up in Southern Baptist Conservative Church, fire and brimstone, Revelation, end times. It was the early 80s, so the Russians were going to get us, Red Dawn style. And here we are, 25 years later, the terrorists are going to get us. The Independent reporting on the plot to blow up the Pope on his recent tour. It was all a Muslim plot, as we'll get into a little bit later. We'll see that generally these plots contain some type of plant, some type of informant, some type of provocateur. An interesting note on a so-called rapture suicide cult. They were after a few days, so we'll take it from the most recent report from CNN. Missing cult-like group found alive after suicide fears. But the original police alert goes back to MSNBC. Six adults, eight children planned suicide. Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect got into the rapture cult suicide alert. For the first time in months, Obama attends church publicly. But if we jump over and get, we'll just dive right into the pop culture pool. And we note that the occult-obsessed elite are claiming that Christine O'Donnell, GOP Senate candidate out of Delaware, quote-unquote Tea Party, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I believe, her anti-masturbation stance on MTV back in the 90s. We'll get to the clip in a little bit, as we'll see our holy hexes and our media memes swirl around each other. But furthermore, on the things we discussed in the previous episode that are on cyberspacewar.com, that are on newworldnextweek.com, Pope's astronomer says he would baptize an alien if it asked him. Tie that in with the Lucifer telescope being built next to the Vatican Observatory in Arizona, the Catholic Church saying it's okay to believe in aliens, the UN appointing an ambassador to greet our alien visitors when they arrive, and we see this hype building and building and building. The event, indeed. And again, this is something that my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org gets into and does quite well. And hopefully we're going to have him back as a guest very soon on the show to get into all of this. Appropriately enough, as we approach Halloween, October surprise time. Vatican Bank faces money laundering probe. Can you believe that? I am shocked. I am shocked that the organization connected to the Mafia and the P2 Lodge, Freemasonry, Nazis, I can't believe they would launder money. EdgeBoston.com reporting on the latest televangelist scandal. I don't even have the guy's name in front of me. I believe he's out of Georgia. He's a black preacher. He is being accused of having relations with younger men in the church. I believe at some point they probably were of consensual age, but the sticking point is he was a vehement homophobe. Why is it the folks who put up the biggest fight methinks they doth protest too much? Mark Foley, we're looking at you. And why is it, unfortunately, when it's conservatives, when it's religious men, it's always gay? It always blows up. Is it a part of the scheme to basically destroy any belief in religion? Possibly. Is anti-gay pastors' homophobia a smokescreen? Our last holy hex note we'll take yet again from the Belief blog on CNN. And yet again, hop across the pond as UK political drama follows biblical pattern. The dramatic announcement by British politician David Miliband, once widely expected to succeed Gordon Brown as leader of the Labour Party, that he's stepping back from frontline politics completes a chapter in a political psychodrama that has transfixed the British political classes for months. You see, it's not just any upstart who beat David Miliband to the leadership post. It's his younger brother, Ed. Commentators have been dragging out parallels of other brothers as they struggle to explain what happened, but they seem to have missed the obvious comparison, Jacob and Esau. Like Esau, in the book of Genesis, David is the elder brother. Esau, a hunter, was beloved by his father, while David is popular with labor lawmakers and party members. In the complicated voting system for selecting and electing a labor party leader, David did better among both groups than Ed did. But Jacob, the younger brother, was his mother's favorite. Ed, for his part, was the preferred candidate among union members, the movement that birthed the Labour Party. He won enough votes to then overcome David's lead in the other groups. In the Bible, Jacob persuades his starving older brother to sell him his birthright in exchange for a meal. With his mother's help, Jacob tricks his blind father into blessing him, the younger son, rather than Esau, the firstborn. To be sure, there's no indication that David despised his birthright or that Ed tricked him out of anything, but Ed may be hoping that the rest of the Miliband story follows the political pattern. Jacob flees from his brother's wrath, but he remains the main character in the story, ultimately building up a wealth and large family, then assuaging his brother's anger with gifts when he returns home. Esau forgives him, and they ultimately bury their father, Isaac, together. Esau then essentially disappears from biblical history. Jacob, meanwhile, becomes father to a great nation, Israel. The Miliband brothers, as it happens, are Jewish. Either one would have been the first Jewish leader of the Labour Party. Holy hexes and pop a culture indeed, my friends. We'll also remind you in the previous episode on cyberspace war we were getting into the biblical clues found within this Stuxnet virus hitting computer systems worldwide, but seemingly targeted at Iran. Meanwhile, Cyberstorm 3 goes on with our new cybercom running drills of malware infecting computers. Within that code is a reference to Esther from the Bible. The reference contains Israel preempting a Persian strike. Holy hexes, indeed. But it segues kind of smoothly into our media and meme stories. And again, I try and put all of these stories into their appropriate subheadings and boxes and put them in some kind of order that tells the story, that puts it together. So before we dive back into the witchcraft and pop culture, we'll get into what is good news for the alternative media, which you are soaking in currently. A Gallup poll has revealed that a record majority of Americans fundamentally do not trust the mass media and believe it to be politically biased. When asked how much confidence they have in newspapers, TV, and radio to accurately report events, 57% of Americans surveyed said that they generally have, quote, not very much or none at all. American people to corporate media, we don't trust anything you say. Now, let's not slip down that slippery slope. There is truth. There is wisdom to be gained from all of that raw information. But as we note, the mainstream media isn't necessarily all lies. They lie by omission. And they don't give you the context. They won't tell you why something would be important or how it related to an event happened last week, let alone last year or last decade. Now, as we've seen, and we'll reference again as we go on through this episode, there's been an amazing pushback from the left gatekeeper funny men on TV, where essentially most folks seem to get their news now from The Daily Show. We'll get into their Council on Foreign Relations writers in just a little bit. But there's been a massive pushback from these guys against this fake Tea Party movement. Again, and I'm being glib, Things are more complicated than that, but it's been co-opted. It's not the liberty-minded movement that it once was. Co-opted, out from under, Campaign for Liberty, Ron Paul style. Bill Maher digs up Christine O'Donnell witchcraft clip. Now, if folks like Bill Maher, confusing my talking head Bills there, that all used to do better work, he can do amazing work digging back into the archives and finding clips of these fake, phony reactionaries who don't really deserve the time or the ink. And yet they have no time for 9/11 questions. We'll remind you of 9/11 Truth activists taking over Bill Maher's live, real-time show, which has now been a year or so ago. No time for 9/11 questions, yet all the time and all the great digging investigative research to attack these phony straw men. So let's do it. Here it is. Here's the vaunted clip. Christine O'Donnell says she dabbled in witchcraft.
I dabbled in witchcraft. I never joined a coven.
Wait a minute. You were a witch?
Yeah, she was a witch.
You were a witch?
Coven. I didn't join a coven. Let's get this
straight. Wait a minute. I love this. You're a witch. You go on Halloween's bit.
I was a witch.
I mean, wait a minute.
That's exactly why.
How is she a witch?
Because I dabbled into witchcraft. I hung around people who were doing these things.
Having fun.
I'm not making this stuff up. I know what they told me they do.
Well, what did they do?
I mean, and one of my dates, the witch was on a satanic altar, and I didn't know it. And I mean, there's little blood there and stuff like that.
That was a date? Your first date was a satanic altar?
Yeah, we went to a movie and then like had a little midnight picnic.
Let's have a movie and a sacrifice.
Now the simple question is: so where's this dude in our fame for 15-minute culture? You know, just like YouTube lets us upload videos at 15 minutes. Now we'll all be famous for 15 minutes. Don't you think this guy would come out and say, "Hey, that was me"? Interview me, People Magazine, or who the hell ever else. But no. This is exactly what Clyde Lewis, GroundZeroMedia.org, gets into on the latest episode with guests Rex Church from the Church of Satan, Scott Ferguson, a Wiccan, debunking this whole story of Christine O'Donnell, a good witch or a bad liar. And again, as long as we're wading into the disgusting pool of bullshit party politics, can you imagine if a fake lefty said something like this? So then, this ties in with the march that's coming on, the Rally to Restore Sanity, the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert dog and pony show. Democrats brought out their trained clown to distract perhaps from something else going on. Maybe you caught the clip of Stephen Colbert doing his bit in front of Congress talking about migrant workers. However, here's the part you maybe didn't hear following his opening statement.
I would like to recommend that now that we've got all this attention, that you excuse yourself and that you let us get on with the three witnesses and all the other members there, and we're sure it'll be shown on the show tonight, and maybe Monday. I don't know. You run your show. We run the committee. But what do you say to that, Stephen?
And then his microphone doesn't work, and he basically says he was only there through request of another congressperson. But that's maybe the part you didn't hear, where they asked him to leave after the dog and pony show is over. Now, the possible distraction that's referred to by Big Hollywood, one of the Breitbart conservative blogs, this went in the same time that there were, I believe, testimonies going on in this Obama Department of Justice scandal that I believe involves Black Panthers and intimidation of white voters at elections, and just, again, all the dirty, disgusting divide and conquer. But our last couple media meme notes. Bono's One Foundation under fire for giving a tiny percentage of funds to charity. More on that from the Daily Mail. And our last three notes are obituaries, essentially. I was up late the other night, as I'm apt to do sometimes. And late in the night, I saw that comedian Greg Giraldo, so-called insult humor comedian, dead of an overdose at the age of 44, featured on Comedy Central's Roast and has been on a ton of other shows, Lewis Black, all kinds of things. Another stand-up comedian, dead of an overdose. As I believe I mentioned on the show, stand-up comedy seems to be enjoying a resurge. But then on the sidebar, I noticed at the same time, Arthur Penn, the director of Bonnie and Clyde and numerous other films, died at the age of 88. Credited, quote-unquote, with bringing massive sex and violence to the movies in 1969. And right on cue, they always come in threes, Tony Curtis died at the age of 85. So there, my friends, are your media and memes. And we're still working our way down the news purge. We've still got West Virginia worry, Oregon oddities, Obama Sia updates. But first, all the insanity and murder and mayhem that you can handle. We'll start off with a mention. Middle-aged suicide rates on the rise in the U.S. That's from NewsmaxHealth.com. Of course, tying it in with the controlled demolition of our economy. It's no accident. A 41-year-old woman executed in Virginia. Meanwhile, Schwarzenegger delays an execution. And on, the copycat effect, the clustering of these mass shooter events, the mass murder contagion, as we call it. Two were shot, and of course the gunman killed at Fort Bliss.
And unfortunately, we have an incident that occurred today at Fort Bliss.
The FBI has opened a criminal investigation into several shots fired on post at a shopette, a small grocery store and gas station. The shots were reported at 3 on Monday afternoon, and law enforcement arrived on the scene within 3 minutes.
There were two victims that we are aware of at this time.
The alleged shooter was killed on the scene by Fort Bliss law enforcement.
Our law enforcement agents took it upon themselves to react immediately and aggressively, and I think that's the main reason why this didn't escalate further than it is right now.
This is not the first shooting on post. In April of last year, a man killed his wife, a soldier at the PX. That had been the first incident of its kind in 20 years.
It concerns me a little bit because this time used to just be real quiet, real calm, and not a whole lot going on.
But he believes more incidents like these can be expected.
We have so many soldiers living here now, which is great for our city because it boosts the economy, but at the same time, we also have a lot of new soldiers that have problems. Coming in off deployments or problems at home.
Now that clip is pretty gruesome audio clarity-wise, but you can hit up the links to murder-suicide.blogspot.com for the original report. But what he was essentially saying is you have people that have been traumatized by wars of aggression, where they've killed civilians and families, all for the empire, chewed up and spit out. And as they did note in there, the FBI is investigating this Fort Bliss murder/suicide. The founder of Segway, Segway millionaire, who, of course, just happened to have defense industry ties to British and American militaries, found dead. Jimmy Heseldon, owner of Segway, died after riding one of the two-wheeled machines off a cliff and into a river. 62 years old. Another interesting death. And they always seem to be connected to the very industries that are on the front of the news. And as if, again, all these things weren't copycat replays, like Charles Whitman, Police say man kills self after shooting at UT.
We were telling you just a short time ago, we were able to get back down by PCL. You actually might be able to hear right now the sirens going off on campus. This is to alert students that something is going on. In just a minute, you're going to be able to hear the voice come over the monitor, letting folks know somebody running up the street here. Definitely a lot going on out here. I want to show you some video from just moments ago of just a lot of activity in front of PCL. At this time, we're still getting the same information you are back at the station as far as an individual, you know, possibly have shot him or herself inside PCL. It's just, you know, such a scary thing for students out here. So many people spend so much of their time inside that building. I actually, as a grad student, spend what feels like half my life inside of that library. So it's certainly just a scary time for people who are in there. Many times during the early morning hours, there are a lot of students inside PCL before class begins. I know because I've been there a lot of the times in the morning studying. So at this time, though, we don't know how many individuals were inside the library at the time. We're still waiting for word as far as any injuries.
And you can tell the shakiness in her voice, selling you on the fear that a mass shooter is just around the corner. Again, we don't fly off the handle on this show and say that everything's a conspiracy, everything was an inside job. But red flags start to appear on events that get a lot of news coverage. So what about this amazing coincidence? This UT shooting just happened to cancel a pro-gun speech that was about to take place. A shooting at the University of Texas campus that was initially blamed on a lone nut took on a political aspect after it emerged that the incident coincided with a speech by Second Amendment expert John Lott about the right to concealed carry that was due to take place that night but, of course, was canceled. Lott appeared on InfoWars and indicated, quote, "The dean for the law school expressed concern about me talking about this subject, so I think they had some trepidation to begin with." Pardon the racket outside the studio. Jesus, everywhere I go, they're running lawn implements or movers or construction. But again, just an amazing coincidence as we fall apart here. I believe legitgov.org goes into the oddities connected and contained in this story. I believe the guy's last name was Thule. A site I made contact with recently, criminaljusticeuniversity.net. They've got the rundown on 8 gunmen that went postal, just giving you the flashback and the context for a lot of these other mass murder contagion events. Again, speaking of copycat effect, copycateffect.blogspot.com. Lauren Coleman getting into the recent wave of NFL suicides. Award-winning Quentin Tarantino film editor Sally Menke, M-E-N-K-E, found dead in the Hollywood Hills, apparently of heat. And I'll only speculate, is there a Tarantino body count? With carotene, supposed autoerotic asphyxiation death. The prosecutor in the Ted Stevens corruption trial commits suicide right on time. Ted Stevens, of course, just passing away. Another plane crash death, of course, connected with British Petroleum. Sinister forces, my friends. We're going to close out the murder and mayhem with a bizarre story that, again, I heard from groundzeromedia.org. The man who fell to Earth.
If a man falls from the sky but nobody can find a trace of him, did it really happen? That's what they're asking in Egg Harbor Township tonight. New Jersey correspondent Dorna Mushanik is live on the Black Horse Pipe, where she talked to a woman who swears she saw it happen. Nora?
Jim, we're just a couple of miles from the Atlantic City Airport and the FAA Tech Center, so the people who work at this veterinarian's office are used to seeing planes fly overhead. But they say yesterday it wasn't a plane. They saw a body falling from the sky in the distance over that tree line. And the mystery now is, if that's true, where is that person?
There's no doubt that it was a person. We are 100% sure.
Kelly Hale was one of three employees at Shore Veterinarians on the Black Horse Pike in Egg Harbor Township near the Cardiff Circle who looked out this window Tuesday afternoon to see a horrifying sight in the sky.
I seen the guy falling on an angle like this, straight down. No parachute, no paraglider. You could see the arms and legs flay on, and you could have clothes were blue, a dark blue like a navy, black and gray.
Off in the distance, one of the women saw what's described as a tan single-engine plane that soon disappeared.
We don't know if he came out of the plane. We don't know if he fell out of a wheel well. We don't know.
After seeing the incredible sight, the vet employees rushed to call 911, triggering a multi-agency search that had focused on a wooded area between Route 40 and Tilton Road. Lieutenant Commander Paul Whitmore piloted a Coast Guard helicopter that spent almost 3 hours sweeping back and forth over the treetops.
We didn't see any signs of debris. We didn't see any broken branches, of something falling through the tree line. We didn't see anything out of the ordinary. But that's not to say that it didn't happen.
Egg Harbor Township Police say there are no reports of missing skydivers or incidents at area airports and have suspended the search until more information is available.
Did you check the sanity of the people that said it?
There are certainly doubters, but the witnesses say they're sure of what they saw.
I think they're kind of really upset that they've even may have seen someone die.
He might be stuck in a tree somewhere. They need to find him. I mean, there's somebody laying back there.
The employees here were not the only ones to witness this. We're told that two or three others also spotted something and were helping police try to pinpoint the location. But for now, no body has been found, and the mystery continues. Live in Egg Harbor Township, I'm Nora Mushanik, Channel 6 Action News. Jim?
Yes, I am Jim. Thanks, Action News. The man who fell to Earth. Things are stranger than fiction, my friends. And we'll take this opportunity to tell you we're now into hour number two of this 188th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 1st of October, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, simulcast live on zeropointradio.com and revereradio.net, and streaming live video on ustream.tv. These videos then made available on YouTube and archive.org as a way, again, to build out the redundancy, to just spread this information. Maybe you're not going to listen to a two-hour podcast. How about a little 10-minute video that has some links for you? We're still going down our massive September 30th news purge titled Floating Vibes, named for the intro track that we started the episode off from Surfer Blood. But let's get into the Obama-Saya updates and all the criminal cabinet members and Congress critters. You gotta see it. Thanks to Washington's blog, there is an exhaustive graphic illustration of all the differences between the modern Democratic and Republican parties. And that would be the donkey and the elephant joined at the ass with piles of money around them. It's that simple. Associated Press noting, and they're out. Congress flees D.C. to campaign. Yes, they're running home to their constituents to try and explain, one, why they don't do what their constituents want, and two, why they should continue to vote these people back in. Washington Post notes that as November nears, voters turn backs on both parties. What if they hold an election in which voters don't like either of the choices? Oh my God, imagine that. Well, we're going to find out here in just over 30 days. As poll after poll shows that both national parties are deeply unpopular, with an electorate looking for something new and different. Dems have suffered from being the majority party for the past 20 months, in control of political Washington, and expected to do more by voters who elected Obama to change the culture in the District of Criminals. But the GOP ain't offering much that'll earn them credit in the eyes of most voters either. 38% in this poll, New York Times, CBS, approved of the Democrats, while 60 disproved. That is, disapproved. We hate both parties. We know they're completely connected and corrupted. But I don't want to vote throw my vote away on a third party. They could never win. Just don't look. Furthermore, from Gallup, Americans renew a call for third party. So again, let's see if we can take all this polling and all these opinion and armchair quarterbacking and see if people will put their vote where their mouth is and vote out these career politicians. We reported for you several months ago another poll where pretty much most respondents said, I would prefer people randomly chosen from the phone book to the criminals that we have right now. And of course, it's October 1st, and now we are in the realm of October surprise. So, let's take this report from Aaron Dykes on JonesReport.com. Obama admin predicts small-scale terror in time for elections again? Terrorism concerns necessarily hinge on fear, and it's now completely predictable that an otherwise unpopular Obama administration would roll out the terror threat to bolster support for the 2010 elections. The Washington Post reports that, quote, risk of small-scale attacks by Al-Qaeda and its allies is rising, officials say. This alarming headline comes in concert with comments from Obama about absorbing a terror attack, as well as, of course, hyperbolic warnings from Napolitano, head of Homeland Stupidity, saying before Congress that Al-Qaeda is recruiting for homeland attacks. And then we flip to the other phony side, Politico reporting on an article called Graham, White House talks just went dead. This is about Lindsey Graham talking about the closure of Guantanamo Bay and how they were talking about it, and then suddenly it just all went dead. What's mentioned further down the article, way further down the article, where Lindsey Graham says, quote, there's going to be an attack. There's going to be the impetus. That's going to be what it takes to get Congress and the administration talking. We have to get hit again. Junkies calling for their terror fix just to give them enough political capital to get through another season to ram more draconian, liberty-destroying legislation down our throats. And as the former White House Chief of Staff, soon to be Mayor of Chicagoland, Rahm Emanuel notes, you never let a catastrophe go unexploited. We'll make a brief note about my home state of West Virginia, where that Senate race has become unexpectedly tight as now former Governor Joe Manchin stepped down running for Senate, and now he's getting hurt by the GOP guy, Racy, R-A-E-S-E. Federal probe muddies West Virginia Senate race. This is again from Politico, noting, again, when you get behind pretty much anybody that's in politics, you're going to find kickbacks for your district, in this case, Fairmont, West Virginia. Inspector General report exposes FBI exam cheating scandal. More on that from allgov.com. We also note that as our Congress critters flee the District of Criminals to come back and beg us to vote their sorry asses back in, this coming Monday, October 4th, the U.S. Supreme Court begins a new term with a slew of technology and civil rights issues queued up on the docket, some of which could have far-reaching implications for the Freedom of Information Act, copyright, warrantless searches of private residents, the state secrets privilege, and freedom of expression. And I'm sure we'll see Kagan eager to show her stuff and crush freedom of speech. That's how they roll. So, speaking of state secrets, Glenn Greenwald notes, of course, the Obama administration arguing that their assassination program is a state secret. You know, that assassination program where they say they can kill American citizens abroad who are even suspected of being involved in terrorism. Brennan put it out for us earlier in the year. I talked about it on KUFO with Clyde Lewis. And that's what we've seen. The parties change. And just as we noted, as people turning their backs on the main parties, with the Democrats in power, you know, now they're absorbing the garbage. And again, this is the phony left-right system that props it up. One's in, one's out. One's asleep, one's awake. As if all that crap wasn't enough, Obama calls for a longer school year.
President Obama tells reporters he's in favor of a longer school year because he says we're behind in the education process across the world.
The president also called for the removal of the worst performing teachers in school districts. Cody Spain joins us now live in Tyler with more on this story. Cody?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, the Associated Press says that President Obama recently commented on the state of our nation's schools. The president says that specifically the District of Columbia schools are struggling. The president also called for two major changes in the education industry.
I think we should have longer school years. We now have our kids go to school about a month less than most other advanced countries, and that month makes a difference.
A longer school year could be in the works for students. The president calls for an increase in the number of days students should attend in a school year. Some parents here in East Texas agree.
I think there's plenty for children to learn, and it wouldn't hurt to have a little extra time to learn it.
Others see the increase as something they would have to get used to.
I have a background in education. I know it would not be popular with students, probably, and it would require some adjustment for parents and scheduling and things like that.
But a longer school year wasn't the only issue the president was calling for. He also told reporters bad teachers have to go.
If we can't identify teachers who are subpar, give them the opportunity to get better. But if they don't get better at a certain point, saying these teachers should not be in the classroom, if we don't do that, then we are doing a disservice to our kids. And the school system has to be designed not for the adults. It's got to be designed for the children.
Now, so far, the president has not said how long that he thinks that a typical school year should be, but only that the concept makes sense. Reporting live in Tyler, Cody Spain, KTK, NBC.
Now, if that seems fairly innocuous, yes, we're falling behind, but as we fall behind in all the other areas, you know that it's not by accident. If this seems at first sniff a fairly innocuous idea, I implore you to check out things like the School Sucks podcast or the Underground History of American Education from John Taylor Gatto. The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America by Charlotte Iserbeat. And, of course, all the latest podcasts from peacerevolution.org. They need your kids. That's how they get the next generation. To be just smart enough to push the buttons for the elite and ruling oligarchs, but not smart enough to ask any pesky questions. They'll just go to their feelies, they'll take their soma. Ford's in his flivver, all's right with the world. Our last notes here on Obamasiah relates to all the other puppet characters. Former President Jimmy Carter, hospitalized with stomach virus. Of course, all due to our bad food system. More on that from Barth Blog. Larry Summers, Obama's top economic advisor, leaving. More on that from the Washington Post. Rahm Emanuel announced his resignation. Some guy named Pete Rouse is going to step in as chief of staff. I wonder how much longer Robert Gibbs can hang on as the press secretary. As again, you got to roll through the birdcage liner. These guys are all puppets. We're all told to project our angers and hopes and fears onto these cast of characters that are essentially the shadows on the wall. They sell the agenda and they're moved along, and then they get, you know, some Tony gig set up somewhere later, private sector. Let's quickly, amazingly, my friends, close out this massive 9:30 news purge, floating vibes with a little Oregon oddities in West Virginia worry. First, a funny one by way of itnews.com. Oregon hunters repeatedly shoot down Google Fiber. There's a big Google center in the Dalles. That's a place here in Oregon. D-A-L-L-E-S. But on a much worse note, from our own Oregonian, Portland architect admits to being part of international child porn network. Tie that in with all of the NSA and DOD guys recently busted for child porn. But then our last two notes on the news purge are two notes of West Virginia worry. First is, unfortunately, no surprise at all, West Virginia kids among some of the poorest in the nation.
Local groups who help those living in poverty see the faces of the people who make up these alarming statistics, and they're noticing the increase in poverty as well. Our 13 News' Nikki Walters joins us live in the Charleston studio tonight with more. Nikki, you talked with people at Mountain Mission today. What'd you find out?
Well, Sandra, last year the Mountain Mission helped feed and clothe nearly 9,000 people. And in the months to come, they are expecting the need for help to grow as more children live in poverty. At the Mountain Mission in Charleston, keeping food on the shelves is more difficult than ever as families come in searching for help.
There are many mothers that come in with infants, they come in with toddlers and children of all ages.
The real-life consequences of the jump in childhood poverty are clear daily as desperate parents try to keep food on the table, a roof overhead, and clothes on their children's backs.
When you can help a family and you look in a mother's eyes and she is touched by you making sure that her child has food for the week, it makes you feel good.
Margie Hale with West Virginia Kids Count says the long-term effects of poverty can be devastating.
Kids who are poor tend to drop out of school, get in trouble with the law, don't stay in school, maybe have babies too soon, don't have as good a job, don't have as good income, you know, later in life. So there are just these dire outcomes for kids who are poor.
And while the problem is obvious, the solution may be more challenging.
People really are in need, and we want to make sure that we're ready.
Now, Margie Hale with West Virginia Kids Count says on a more positive note, West Virginia's child poverty rate is actually down from what it was a decade ago. In 2000, 26% of kids were living in poverty in the Mountain State. That compared to the 24% that was announced today, Sandra.
Very interesting. All right. Thank you very much for that report, Nikki.
As we know time and time again, if they, as the King of Pop said, they don't really care about us. If we really wanted to take care of people, we could deliver it with the same shock and awe fashion that we kill people around the world. We will close out this massive 9:30 news purge, floating vibes, the way we began it. Back to my home state of West Virginia, and we get the story from allgov.com. Massey officials file lawsuit to avoid testifying about the mining disaster that happened back in April. Again, I'll remind you of the interview with Reverend Billy on Mountaintop Revival. And amazingly enough, and I can't really source back exactly how and why it happened, but my episode that covered the mining disaster, the Upper Big Branch Mine, this last April, killing dozens in Montcoal, West Virginia. It even features an interview with my dad, who was on the scene. That's my second most downloaded episode, right behind the amazing interview with Peter Lavenda on Sinister Forces. I'm not sure where the link came from or how it went so viral, but again, I'd like to think it was because the timeliness and the passion and the information and exclusivity that was there. There you have it. Let's move now to our latest police state updates, my friends. Surveillance and apple pie. The first story we covered on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, and that would be the FBI raids on anti-war activists. Of course, they are intimidation, not investigation. There were no arrests. There aren't going to be any charges. But, of course, homes were ransacked. Nerves were rattled. Calm was shattered. It was a fishing expedition to see what they could scoop up on people planning protests for, one, the 2012 War Party conventions. Not to mention the elections coming up here in about 30 days. Intimidation. So we have more on that from StarTribune.com, Antiwar.com, InfoWars, Feds Expand War of Terror, Raid Anti-War Activists. But we'll hop again to News Junkie Post for American as Apple Pie, Spying on Your Own Citizens. During the Bush era in the sweeping intrusive context of the Patriot Act, U.S. citizens found out that their international communications were spied on with the generous complicity of their trusted telecoms like AT&T and Verizon. These actions were, until 2008, clearly outside the norms of the defined wiretap authorization given by the FISA court. The Obama administration has in the works something just as sweeping and intrusive for the little we have left as far as right to privacy and civil liberties are concerned. We source back again to the article from Charlie Savage in the New York Times. We noted it on the previous episode. U.S. tries to make it easier to wiretap the internet, as if it weren't already worldwide wiretap set up by the military, the biggest websites funded by InQtel, the investment arm of the CIA. And we willingly give up all our information. But the real problem here is this. Once a society or a state become permanently obsessed with so-called security, civil liberties and right to privacy are squashed. Because of authoritarian measures such as the Patriot Act, the executive branch of government's ability to spy on U.S. citizens is already too broad, and the new law proposed by Obama would only expand it. Big Brother Barry Satoro government has been with us for some time, and this would only make matters worse. A hell of a lot worse. The administration is basically arguing and simply hoping to emulate the CALEA Act, C-A-L-E-A, Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act, which you may remember from a recent Korber Report episode. This basically ties in spying on BlackBerries and Skype, things that are, up until now, encrypted, we believe. Swirling around all this, of course, the spying going on in Pennsylvania, and I incorrectly noted on our episode 187 from 2 weeks ago, I mistakenly thought it was people paying attention to the military war game drills being run by Homeland Security and private military contractors. That's the drill I thought they were referring to. However, it's about natural gas and Enviro crash. That's what the anti-drilling activists were all about. And more on the mysterious institute that spied on those Pennsylvanian anti-drilling activists from citypaper.net. And of course, that is the Israeli company contracted by our government to spy on Pennsylvania citizens. It's just a coincidence, I'm sure. Meanwhile, the Homeland Security chief in Pennsylvania went into hiding when all of this hit the fan. I'm not sure what the state of that is right now, but it gets worse. The police state unfolds in many different ways in many different cities, but the MO is generally the same. It's put to you as a PR push, as if you need the military to help you with everything in your daily life, whether that's traffic or a fire or getting a flu shot. What about radiating Americans? Feds radiating Americans. Google that. You know, that's the go-to search term from a couple of days ago. Counter-terror operation stops trucks on I-20 in Atlanta.
We have new information on this breaking news. Hundreds of truck inspections on Interstate 20 in the past few minutes. We confirm this is all part of a counter-terrorism operation. Good evening. I'm Monica Pearson.
And I'm John Pruitt. Everyone from Homeland Security to Air Marshals are involved. We've seen inspectors pulling over semis on I-20 in Douglas County, and they've been using explosive detectors on those trucks.
A tip to Channel 2 investigative reporter Mark Winnie got us started on the story late this afternoon. Mark has been working his sources ever since. He's live on the scene with what he's learned in the past few minutes. Mark.
See this guy right here? I understand that device he's using on that truck is to detect radiation. Now, the TSA spokesman told us that the federal air marshals are the lead federal law enforcement agency today at this truck stop in Douglas County, but there are federal, state, and local agencies involved. The operation is called VIPER, Visible Intermodal Prevention and Response. Here's what we put together. We're told the big truck with the boom is an X-ray machine for tractor trailers and other large containers. That this X-ray machine looks not for broken bones, but signs of explosives, weapons, anything unusual. We're told this truck and every truck coming through is being checked for radiation, explosives, and drugs. Nelson Minerly at the Federal Air Marshal Service told me after the Madrid train bombing, it was obvious TSA needed to do more to combat terror for transportation besides air traffic. He says this is a counterterrorism operation. though counter-drug operations and safety inspections are underway also.
So how'd you get picked for the x-ray line?
Your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea. They just pulled me around.
How long have you been stopped already?
Half an hour, maybe.
All right, Ted, we're back live. There are a bunch of agencies here, too numerous to mention, really, but again, federal, state, and local. Viper operations, we're told, have been conducted around the country. I don't know if there's been many of this scale. However, we have got a number of crews out here. You heard my colleague Richard Belcher asking a question of a truck driver there. So we plan to come back as developments warrant if it's needed. For now, this is Mark Winnie reporting live, Channel 2 Action News.
See, it takes a lot of organizations to desensitize the military and the civilians to the military performing operations such as this. As they even say, this is multi-tiered. So not only are they rolling out the naked body scanners that are, of course, embarrassing and store your naked photo later to be laughed at by corrupt TSA employees, not to mention the fact that it ruins your DNA, not to mention the fact that folks like Michael Chertoff are at the heads of companies that are forcing and rolling out these body scanners, not to mention the fact that most of the airports were already scheduled to install them pre-Christmas underwear bomber Patsy PSYOP false flag event happened. But as they do mention, well, we're also going to do some safety checks and, you know, check for drugs or, you know, anything we want. We use it as a guise. How long will we put up with it? Speaking of the TSA, from CNN, TSA to expand number of employees who will have secret clearances. I think it'll basically be now a third of them will have high-level security clearances. But why let the TSA and the corrupt little boss hogs getting off on their little bit of authority? Don't let them have all the fun. Go on over to snapscouts.org, crowdsourcing crime prevention, teaching your kids to spy on your neighbors for mixing up recycling or running their power too long or anything suspicious. DHS to require minimum delay of 72 hours before flying as of November 1st. This question being asked by Cryptogon.com, sourcing back to publicly available Q&As and fact sheets from airlines. 72 hours. That's a waiting list, essentially. And I had the misfortune of going to the airport this past Sunday. It's as if they almost don't want you to fly. It's as if they want you to become so frustrated by being nickeled and dimed and poked and prodded and analyzed and pulled aside for extra security that you stay in your home and tune in, sack out, and shut up. Big Sister Napolitano again tries to force body scanners on other countries amidst backlash and the aforementioned underwear bomber. Kurt Haskell, one of the main witnesses of this Patsy underwear bomber event, he's got a new piece on this upcoming trial of Mutalab. It's on HaskellFamily.blogspot.com. And he notes that Mutalab fired his lawyers and wants to represent himself, which could be quite fascinating, my friends. And seemingly all these things come from Amsterdam for some reason. Here's more. Unruly passenger forces Amsterdam flights return to Seattle. Boeing gets $89 million to build unmanned aircraft that can stay aloft for 5 years. That's from networkworld.com. And we're back to, as we mentioned a little bit ago, anytime we have these busts, anytime we have these major terror events, of course we find the ugly fingerprints of the intelligence agencies. Such as in the Bronx.
More and more shocking information is coming out about Shahid Hussein, the FBI informant at the heart of the prosecution's case. On the stand in federal court Thursday, he admitted attending a terrorist training camp in Pakistan and traveling to London, all while on the FBI payroll.
Oh, he's good. He's a shyster, so I can see why they use him. I said the case should be called Who Can Lie the Most?
Hussein, working as an undercover informant, supplied James Cromedy, David Williams, Ante Williams, and Laguerre Payne with fake explosives and recorded their conversations. The men from Newburgh are on trial for allegedly trying to blow up synagogues in the Bronx and shoot down military planes in Orange County. Hussein surprised the courtroom when he said he was friends of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, who was assassinated in 2007. He said while Bhutto was here in 2002, she gave his family $40,000 to buy her Mercedes-Benz. He also testified he comes from a wealthy family in Pakistan and has received $500,000 from a trust fund since being in the United States.
Totally surprised. We had never heard of the trust fund. It's not on any of his financial documents. It's not in the bankruptcy filing. It's not on any statement that he has ever filed regarding his income, his finances, or his assets. And the first we heard about it was today. Well, you heard it when we heard it.
Attorney Susan Brody wrapped up her cross-examination of Hussein by asking him, isn't being able to stay in the United States more important than any money the FBI will ever pay you? To that question, he answered yes.
He should have been deported years ago. He shouldn't have been in the country.
Hussein says he came to this country illegally while trying to escape political persecution. He faces deportation because of his involvement in a scheme to sell driver's licenses to illegal aliens. After he was busted for that, he agreed to become an informant. Testimony resumed on Monday. At federal court in Manhattan, Dean Memminger, New York 1.
Well, it's all in there, isn't it? Many pieces of the agenda. And again, my friends, we watch it on TV and we think it's just made-up movie stuff. But the rogue networks and the patsies and the informants and the provocateurs are at work. Are there terrorists? Sure. Do they think they're doing the jihad? Sure. Who's paying their bills? So we'll go from infiltrating groups and provocateuring violence to be busted and trumpeted on the headlines to real-time security cameras now linking New York City subway hubs.
In the stairwells and on the platform, there are 500 cameras placed in nearly every corner of three of the busiest transit hubs in New York City.
All of them keeping a close watch on who and what's going in and out of our subways. CBS2's Scott Rappaport has more on the new subway security.
Securing the subways,
which we know terrorists regard as what they would call high-value targets.
Mayor Bloomberg, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, and MTA Chairman Jay Walder announcing the city's newest security initiative. 500 MTA subway cameras in Grand Central, Penn Station, and Times Square now directly piped into the NYPD's Security Operations Center, allowing police eyes in places where they didn't have them before.
And seated here in the Operations Center, we have police officers reviewing this information 24 hours a day.
It's part of a plan that was initiated in 2005. The MTA cameras now joining the more than 1,000 security cameras that are already in place in Lower Manhattan, on which the NYPD keeps a watchful eye. Significant in the wake of May's failed Times Square bombing and the plot of Najib Boulazizi a year ago to bomb subway trains.
We're also beginning to use software that identifies potentially suspicious objects or behaviors.
Earlier this year, Mayor Bloomberg went to London on a fact-finding trip involving that city's vast network of 12,000 cameras monitoring the train system. It's something MTA Chief Walder says makes sense for New York.
We've taken on an unwanted distinction as one of the leading terror targets in the world.
News of the move was greeted fondly by a lot of subway riders.
I think it's a very good idea, quite honestly.
Absolutely. Why not? Like, it's our protection.
It's an invasion of privacy, but if I'm in the subway, I like the cops looking over my shoulder.
And the mayor and the police commissioner say they're not done yet, with more camera hookups coming soon. Scott Rappaport, CBS 2 News.
The New York Civil Liberties Union says it has questions about the surveillance program regarding privacy issues and who has access to the information gathered. The NYCLU previously sued the NYPD and Department of Homeland Security for access to that information. Both of those suits are still ongoing.
And these privacy questions will remain unanswered as long as we have people, like we just heard in that clip, again, falling for the same tired lie.
If it makes me safe, keeps me safe, I don't have anything to hide. I like the cops looking over my shoulder.
Well, they're not cops, it's the military. Orlando policeman breaks 84-year-old's neck. Just a little bit of protection and service for you from our policy enforcement officers. However, let's now jump back to the land of gangsters. And we'll take it from DeadlineLive.info from my man Call Havoc. During the spring of 2009, FBI agents placed a confidential source to meet with a 22-year-old Lebanese Chicago resident, Sami Samir Hassoun. This according to an affidavit filed Monday with a link for you. This confidential source and Hassoun subsequently developed a friendship and met multiple times per week for about a year. After the two had been well acquainted for about a year, Hassoun allegedly told the confidential source that he wanted to take action that would force Chicago's Mayor Daley from power. Confidential source told Hassoun that they had friends who might be interested in some of the ideas that Hassoun had recently expressed, who, according to the confidential source, would be willing to pay the source and Hassoun to engage in such activity. According to the source, Hassoun had been considering attacks that would command public attention. In one alleged scenario, Hassoun suggested placing a bomb in Daley Plaza during the then-upcoming Arabesque festival. In the response, confidential source asked, "You're going to hit Arab people?" In his reply, Hassoun assured the source he would not detonate an actual bomb, but would instead set off a device that only emanates smoke when activated. This should remind you of the World Trade Center bombing in 93, where Imad Salem, former Egyptian Army officer, was contracted by the FBI. John Antisev was the agent's name. He infiltrated a group, but he gave them real bomb parts. And the attack went forward. You know, it's, you can just read it in that crazy conspiracy rag called the New York Times. Terror attack to unseat Chicago's Mayor Daley. Well, now we have Rambo Emanuel entering the picture. Experts question shooting of Arizona deputy. Now, this is an interesting story. Out of Phoenix, two nationally known forensic pathologists are questioning a sheriff's deputy's version of how he was shot in the remote desert of Phoenix, adding to suspicions by some that the incident was a hoax. Time to stoke the debate over illegal immigration. Deputy Louis Parole of Pinal County told investigators he was following a group of smugglers carrying bales of marijuana on April 30th when he was ambushed by men firing AK-47s. Parole said he was grazed by a bullet in the back in what he described as a running gun battle. The pathologist, Baden of New York, Spitz of Detroit, examined photographs of the wound released by the sheriff's office. They told the AP that they had concluded that the bullet was fired from inches away, not at least 25 yards, as Parole had said. That, my friends, is a false flag attack. Pulling off an attack on your own to be blamed on your political enemies. Both phony sides of this reactionary dichotomy and dialectic do the same thing. Mock terror drills held hours before New Delhi metro station's real attack. More on that from Blacklisted News. Surprise, surprise, drills flipped live. And lastly, we'll get it from foreignpolicy.com, of course, connected to the Carnegie Institute and the Council on Foreign Relations, asking the question, are Americans too Constitution-obsessed? Do we need to do away with that pesky Constitution? Do those people who are screaming about returning to the Constitution, are they domestic homegrown terrorists? They're just stopping progress. They're stopping the inevitable emergence of a North American community. Our last note on this Police State Updates post, surveillance in apple pie, is a fascinating one. I had never seen the video, and I had not heard of the organization and site called NoTolls.com. This comes out of neighbor to the north, Vancouver City, Washington. Council member Jean Smith, I believe is her name. Let's double check that. Oh, it's Jean Harris. That's her name. This concerns the lies coming out of Vancouver, politicians running on no toll roads, and this concerns I-5, which runs through Oregon. I-5, of course, will be an integral artery in the coming NAFTA superhighway. The highways and byways connecting the three nations at the hip in the North American community. Hopefully, I've tried to make some contact. Hopefully, we're going to get someone from NoTolls.com to come on the show and talk about this situation. Now, my friends, we'll get into all the latest war horrors stories. And again, the parties may change, the faces may change. White becomes black and R becomes D, but the agenda of war rolls on and on and on as the innocents pile up dead all around the world. Taking it from Danger Room, 60 dead as helicopters and drones strike Pakistan, but don't call it a war. U.S. officials don't like calling what's going on in Pakistan a war, but the U.S.-led conflict, whatever you name it, has never been this violent. The drone component of the campaign hit a new high over last week in 20 attacks in September alone, killing as many as 101 people. Then, last Monday, NATO confirmed that a pair of its helicopters based in Afghanistan chased militant suspects across the border. 53 more are now reported dead. In the Beltway, it's considered bad form to refer to the Pakistan war. The term's too loaded with geopolitical baggage and raises too many questions about who should be overseeing the conflict at home. But when NATO helicopters kill more than four dozen in Pakistan in a single day, when the CIA-led drone campaign hits 20 targets in 23 days, when thousands of U.S.-trained Afghans cross the border to fight insurgents on Pakistani soil, when American troops ferry aid to Pakistan's flood victims, when the U.S. Air Force flies surveillance sorties over Pakistan, when American security contractors operate on Pakistani turf, and when U.S. Special Operations Forces school Islamabad's army in counterinsurgency and sometimes lose troops to firefights in the process, what else should we name this multi-pronged military campaign? What other term would possibly apply? Obama's wars. Right here, we're talking about Pakistan. We've got tons of linkage in there, mostly going back to Danger Room, but also The Nation and others. But this segues into all the other related war horror updates. And again, it's always interesting when you have to jump across the pond to another country's media to find out what's really going on from your own Department of War. Pentagon to funnel U.S. arms to Yemen to fight al-Qaeda. The Pentagon has proposed a $1.2 billion military aid package to Yemen for its battle against al-Qaeda, sparking a warning from some U.S. government quarters that the extra resources would be used in the country's civil wars. Well, that's why they're doing it. That's how they roll. That's why Operation Cyclone and Brzezinski and Robert Gates and Jimmy Carter drew in the Soviets. Not the other way around, like the story's told. That's why Brzezinski told you all about it in Le Mans, out of France. We went in first to draw in the Soviets to give them their Vietnam. So we fund these guys, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, for our short-term political goals, sometimes long-term, and ultimately it seems to be about not the Middle East. It ultimately seems to be about the U.S. versus Russia and China, and we'll all meet in the Middle East and destroy each other in this apocalyptic Megiddo make it happen on purpose scenario. 9 NATO troops killed in Afghan helicopter crash. That's from the Associated Press. Bob Woodward now has his new book, I believe, called Obama's Wars. I believe we've covered in the past Bob Woodward and his possible CIA cutout role, and that he's there to give the appropriately leaked information, deep throat and all. That's why you hear more about Bob Woodward and you hear less about Bernstein, because, you know, Bernstein would give interviews to Playboy and talk about the media and the CIA having pretty much most control in the mighty Wurlitzer. But Woodward noting in his series of articles unspooling to tie in with the book Obama's Wars, going on the CIA's favorite newspaper, The Washington Post, with their Bilderberg Council on Foreign Relations heads, where they note that the CIA has a 3,000-man covert army in Afghanistan. Army reveals Afghan biometric ID plan, millions scanned, and to be carded by May. Mexican City aims to be the first to use widespread eye-scanning technology. That's from allgov.com, the previous one. The Afghan biometric plan is from Danger Room. And as we've noted, it seems that we've just sidestepped the whole fear about implantable microchips when they can just biometrically scan your ID or your fingerprint. White House disappointed with vote on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Yes, that's right. 20 years later, we're still arguing about this same situation. These are the cultural football issues that we all fight amongst each other about who should marry and who should be able to do what and what consenting adults want to do with themselves. None of your business. But, it, you know, makes for a good show. Former Marine Corps sniper and security contractor, a guy named Shane Schmidt, dies at the age of 33. And, of course, he has interesting connections to what he has seen in combat. More on that from the Washington Post. Returning to Bob Woodward and the third of three articles adapted from Obama's Wars. The article is called Obama. We need to make clear to people that the cancer is in Pakistan. But as we just noted, don't call it a war. This is where we also got our opening quote, talking about General Jim Jones and Leon Panetta and their closed-door meetings with Obama about the war on Pakistan, about the war on Yemen, about the war on Somalia, about the war on Iraq, about the war on Afghanistan. Jim Jones said, if, God forbid, the SUV had blown up in Times Square, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Should a future attempt be successful, Obama would be forced to do things that Pakistan would not like. Quote, no one will be able to stop the response and consequences. This is not a threat, just a statement of political fact. Obama says we need to make clear to people that the cancer is in Pakistan. Well, how do you do that? You've got to have catalyzing terror events. Despite Hillary Clinton pledge, State Department to pay out billions more to private mercenary firms. Change. That's a lot of change. Z has a lot of change in their pocket, which is why their doomsday, apocalyptic, religious, conservative, fucknut Eric Prince bugged out to Dubai, like most of our gangsters and boss hogs who have some millions socked away, and they've done their part furthering the agenda of the private military industrial complex and the international banksters, of which they are the enforcement arm. It continues. Yes, we still do business with companies that get busted trafficking humans, get busted running drugs, get busted murdering civilians, get busted, I don't know, accumulating trophies of their murder victims. The aforementioned Robert Gates, the designated successor, if you'll recall, Google that phrase. Robert Gates, again, involved in Operation Cyclone, funding the Mujahideen, which would then turn into Al-Qaeda, which means the base, the database of Mujahideen fighters that we could bring up to use for terror events. Army's largest base, Fort Hood, reeling from four apparent suicides in one weekend alone. And our last note comes from this morning on Danger Room. Charlie Wilson's warrior becomes top Pentagon spook. This is a guy that was in the film Charlie Wilson's War, portrayed as kind of a little annoying pipsqueak. But here he's now been promoted high-level Pentagon. And of course, it all ties in with the media and selling you all of these stories. Somehow we're going to try and blast through all this, my friends. Let's get our 9/11 updates. Censorship and condemnation. Jon Stewart trashing 9/11 Truth. You can see the photo posted up where he carried the sign on his show that said 9/11 was an outside job. You can dive in and do the research there on 911blogger.com and see that some of the main head award-winning writers of The Daily Show are, of course, members of the Council on Foreign Relations, private think tank selling Fabian socialism set up by Cecil Rhodes and his roundtables. Again, it all goes back to tragedy and hope. But this ties in with the pushback from the phony left funny gatekeepers. They're going to do their march. They're going to do their rally. They're going to do their reactionary reaction to the other phony side when Palin and Glenn Beck had their rally. But you notice these guys have no time for 9/11 questions. They have no time to get into the blank check that essentially leads to all the wars that we're still waging. Fortunately, John Stewart's book signing was interrupted by 9/11 truthers in the wake of his 9/11 was an outside job outburst. Meanwhile, Bill O'Reilly says 9/11 truth activists are dangerous radicals. Project Censored was censored because of their stance on 9/11 truth. 9/11 research was censored from the latest Project Censored. Our local Willamette Week covering the Project Censored 2010 stories makes, of course, no reference to the suppression of 9/11 questions. Meanwhile, the New York Times lies about the popularity of 9/11 truth, the Wall Street Journal doing all it can to contain and belittle 9/11 questions, and then we get back to Operation Dark Heart. We reported on this story last week. Let's get a little bit more on the Pentagon destroying copies of this controversial memoir written by Army officer Anthony Schaefer, who has always claimed that Abel Danger identified Muhammad Atta pre-9/11.
Sources are telling Fox this morning that the Defense Department spent $45,000 on these books to get them out of circulation, and then they burned them. So what is it that is in that book that they do not want you to know?
That is the question. That memoir, Record of One Man's Undercover Mission in Afghanistan, and Steve Santoni's live in Washington on that today. Exactly why did they burn the book, Steve?
Well, Bill, they say Operation Dark Heart poses a threat to national security. They didn't explain exactly why, but part of the book does deal with intelligence information that Muhammad Atta was identified as a threat to the U.S. before the 9/11 attacks occurred. Atta, of course, was the ringleader of the attacks and piloted one plane that did hit the World Trade Center. The book, Operation Dark Heart, written by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he's in the Army Reserves now, he claims he told the 9/11 Commission about this early identification of Atta, but it did not appear in their final report. Schaefer says burning the book strikes him as retaliation. Otherwise, he wonders, why all the fuss?
Everything we found was in the public domain in some form. The contention is by DOD that even if it's in the public domain, it doesn't mean it's unclassified.
So a second version, heavily redacted, that is a lot of things blacked out, will soon be published, Bill.
Did the Pentagon have a look at this before it was printed, Steve?
Well, yeah, they did, and they gave it the go-ahead initially. At least the Army did, but the Defense Intelligence Agency had different concerns. When they heard about the book, they decided it could not be published the way it was. Now, some of the changes would appear to be unnecessary. They refer to intelligence bases here in the U.S. that are common knowledge. Another example, the word SIGINT. Anybody here in Washington knows that stands for Signals Intelligence. But apparently the DIA thinks you shouldn't know about that.
Well, I'm confused. So what happens next?
Yeah, well, the redacted version comes out this week, and some experts say it does nothing but draw attention to the very things the DIA wanted to cover up. Some of the copies of the original book are already out there. Reviewers got them. So all somebody needs to do is compare the two and find out what's supposed to be such a deep, dark secret over the Pentagon.
Ultimately better for book sales, probably. Steve Santoni, thank you. Follow up on that, will you? Thank you, Steve. Live in Washington.
Now, this story surrounding the Pentagon book burning, which again continues the book burning meme, tying in with all our other pop culture memes going around. This story sure seems to be getting massive coverage for something that they wanted to cover up. That's the one stinky red flag, but we'll have to see what spills out of Operation Dark Heart. Then, of course, everyone's favorite 9/11 truther, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, said at the UN most blamed the United States government for 9/11. Obama condemned Ahmadinejad's speech at the United Nations. The establishment feigns outrage at Ahmadinejad's 9/11 rant. And, of course, have no time to mention all the other thousands of architects, engineers, scientists, pilots, ex-military, who all question the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. And, of course, it's a great way to demonize 9/11 truth by having this guy as the main proponent. Retired NASA engineer explains why he doesn't believe the official 9/11 report. More on that from VCReporter.com. An excellent resource from 9/11 blogger. A ton of 9/11 related quotes ready for email. Again, to kind of battle against this idea that only nut jobs have questions about 9/11. Get with the party. I suppose, actually, we've now pretty much run out of time for any more clips. However, I did have a clip of the Ahmadinejad piece, and I do have a clip concerning something coming up in just a second, but first, U.S. military lowered its computer security level the night before 9/11, sourcing back to historycommons.org and their complete 9/11 timeline, completely publicly sourced and documented. This ties in with the recent revelation and interview given to Gary Franchi's Restore the Republic. A guy named Gary Corbett was a World Trade Center employee. He discusses on video, linked up for you, also on world911truth.org. He discusses the pre-9/11 power downs that happened all through the weekend preceding 9/11. So computer security levels went down. The power levels went down. The bomb-sniffing dogs were called off. Fletcher Prouty notes, all you got to do is strip away the standard operating procedure and then anything can happen. DOD says images of Pentagon crash scene before and during 9/11 are unavailable and controlled by the FBI. That in response to another FOIA request from Aidan Monahan. Post-9/11 detainees never charged sue Bush officials for illegal arrest and abuse. We also have the Texas Board of Education attacking non-existent pro-Islamic textbooks. This, again, getting into the culture wars. However, we'll remind you yet again, tying in with this whole terror, threataganda, and the book burning theme. Flashback to the Washington Post. Way back in ancient history, March 22nd, 2002, an article called From U.S., The ABCs of Jihad. In the twilight of the Cold War, the United States spent millions of dollars to supply Afghan schoolchildren with textbooks filled with violent images and militant Islamic teachings, part of a covert attempt to spur resistance to the Soviet occupation. Gosh, why are those crazy Muslims so radical? Oh, I don't know, maybe because we taught them how to be. We have to create the boogeyman. Because in general, when left to our own devices, we all just want to live and love and eat and grow and have happiness. But the powers that be can't have that. They can't run the world on that. Fortunately, we end 9/11 updates on a positive note. House passes 9/11 health care bill. Let's just see what on earth the Senate will do with it. Again, even if you believe all the official stories, even if you believe we should be waging war around the world, don't you think they would even take care of the guys who come home? Don't you think they should take care of the first responders who are dropping like flies? From an EPA who said the air was safe to breathe because they needed to get Wall Street rolling again, because Wall Street is run on drug money and international wars of aggression. Our last three posts we're going to have to blast through quickly, and we'll just implore you to go check out the information for yourself. The first two we do cover on the most recent episodes of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Mao's Great Leap Forward killed 45 million in 4 years. This coming from the new book, Mao's Great Famine, from Frank Decotter. But, of course, what ties in with this is an article from David Rockefeller printed in the New York Times in 1973 called From a China Traveler, where he notes, among other things, that the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in history. If we jump over to Sweden, the anti-immigration party claims seats. We thought that places like Sweden were immune to the scaranoia threataganda of those other people. But as we've noted, that's always the way the powers that be can blame and scapegoat. We gotta blame someone. We've gotta blame someone else for our own misdeeds. And it ties in with the economy, which is our last post from the BBC. Good news, U.S. recession, longest since World War II, but recovery is right around the corner. In other news, bridge is for sale. Recovery will be around the corner, my friends, if we all work together and share. Quickly, creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week or so. Delta Airlines out of Atlanta, American Express out of Phoenix, the DOD Network Information Center out of Burke, Virginia, and finally, North Carolina Administrative Office of the Courts Googled Vatican Builds Telescope. And that telescope is called Lucifer. You can't make it up, my friends. Truth is stranger than fiction, and that's why we do what we do here. Again, I implore you and thank you for sharing. and helping all of this grow, and that's how it's all going to work, my friends. We're out of time. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. This has been the 188th episode for the 1st of October 2010, and as always, don't hate the media. Become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Nexus video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.